Welcome to the Defining Endurance Podcast, a show focused on celebrating the everyday lives of athletes, coaches, and business owners. In this podcast, we break down both the applied science of training and the larger-than-life concepts of how people tackle their lives' biggest goals. We do this by embracing the mental, physical, and emotional demands of what it truly takes to be an endurance athlete. I'm your host, Andrew Simmons. I'm the head coach overseeing adult running programs Lifelong Endurance, as well as the head running coach at Peak Performance Running here in Golden, Colorado. Most importantly, I'm a lifelong student of endurance sports, interested in understanding how we can reach our personal athletic potential. I want to thank you for joining me. Now let's dive into this episode. All right, guys, welcome back to the Defining Endurance Podcast. We're going to talk a little bit today about wisdom to new runners. I think this goes all the way back for us for what we wish we knew. I'm here today with Miss Lexi Miller. My name is Andrew Simmons, and we're going to dive into things here. Lexi, you want to start us off?
Yeah, so this is going to be inspired by our office hours that we have every Wednesday. We started office hours when we realized a lot of athletes were asking the same questions over and over, and we realized that there was probably even more who weren't asking those questions. So we started going out every week and asking people what they wanted to know. And then just like you did in college, you know, when you went and saw a professor when you had, you know, questions about the assignment or about the topic you were learning in class, we take time to answer those every Wednesday. So we thought that'd be a really great theme for our podcast as well. So yeah, starting with new runners, we got lots of questions about, you know, everything from heart rate to how fast you should run, what speed workout should look like. So we're going to go through those questions. And if any come up for you during this episode, feel free to write to us and let us know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the first one here is the biggest snag is defining, you know, just easy aerobic runs. Like, what does it actually mean? What does it feel like? You know, and how often should we do those things? You know, so if you're a new runner out there and you're just getting started with things, to me, I've always defined easy aerobic running as a truly conversational pace. If you can't answer a question that I ask out to you, you know, how many dogs do you see right now? And you have to be like, I see seven. Like, you're going too hard. You know, it should be a pace that if your grandma calls you, you can pick up and be able to answer her questions. She'll know you're out for a run, but, you know, it's not so hard that you have these, you know, gasps of breath in between words. If you're looking at data and you're trying to say, oh, how fast should this be? You know, by majority, we're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of like 78 to 84% of your threshold heart rate, and 78 to 84% roughly of your pace zone. So if you're using Training Peaks or even Garmin has kind of said, hey, here's your zones, they're probably going to tell you this is a zone one, zone two type run. Anything to add on aerobic stuff there, Lexi?
Yeah, I would say, just like you said, conversational, the zone one, zone two. And there's different theories that kind of tell people, you know, stay under 140. Mm-hmm. And that's going to vary person to person. Also, where you are in your training cycle, you might be a new runner where zone two just feels too difficult to you. And this may be something we touch on later. I think the other thing pitfall we see runners go into is they always want to run faster on these easy aerobic runs. Because we tend to, like, you might be able to think, especially if you're running alone, like that conversational pace is really hard to come up with. Because it feels okay. It's a pace you've always run, but we're kind of taxing ourselves a little bit too much there.
Yeah.
So think of it as I tell athletes, think of it as an easy recovery day. Like an active recovery day. You're not, you know, going out to improve on your marathon time with this run, you're going to loosen up and take care of your body and move opposed to just laying on the couch with your legs up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the show notes, I'll link to an article. It's called Training in the Gray Zone. You know, this is where athletes really get stuck is they always feel like they have to finish their run. You know, like feel like they did something, right? It's either got to be good sweat, I have to be out of breath, or I have to feel my lungs hurt or something like that. And you'll get initial results from running hard, but you also just get really, really tired. You know, we should be doing 80% roughly of our, you know, easy runs, 80% of our running should be easy, especially for training for distance. And this is more specifically tuned to people that are doing 5Ks, 10Ks, all the way up onto the marathon and beyond. 80% of your time should be spent running aerobically. The other 20% is where we can fit in those interval things. And, you know, we'll talk all about that kind of stuff here in a little bit. Biggest thing I want you guys to get across here is that it can't be hard. It can't be hard all the time. And if you guys are struggling with that, please feel free to answer, you know, some questions into our Lifelong Endurance. We have an athletes and coaches page. It's a great place to come and ask questions. A great place for new runners. Super supportive. Yeah. So I think the next piece here is kind of fits into this base training.
Yeah. So what is it and why? So we think about, especially if you're a new runner and you're doing, say you're running 3 days a week, 3 miles at a time. So that's going to be your base and where you're starting. And if you're training for your first marathon, half marathon, 10K, whatever it is, we want to get that to a little bit more of a comfortable place. Mm-hmm. Depending on the person, I like to build up a base even before we start a lot of speed work, just to make sure that we're not stressing out the body too much. So, you know, start by adding into 4 days a week, start by increasing those miles a little bit. You know, no more than 10% miles or distance per week is ideal. Or miles or time per week is ideal, again, depending on what you're training for. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think to kind of stress and bring home the idea of base training, you know, this is the foundation that when we think about, you know, a training cycle, if you're saying, okay, I have my race in 16 weeks, you know, you need to be able to have a certain amount of fitness that you can then capitalize on when you're doing your speed work, right? So the people that run more miles, just to kind of give you guys concept, if you're running 15 to 20 miles a week, you know, you may do 2 to 3 miles of speed work, right? But now that, you know, you start to run more miles per week and you start to progress, maybe you're running, you know, 25, 35, 40, 45. Well, what is going to happen there is it allows you to have the ability, and the word I'll use here is capacity. You're building your capacity to handle more speed work where you may have been able to do 2 or 3 800 reps. You know, you start to get to 35, 40 miles a week, you can do 6, you can do 7. And that's what's going to be needed and it's what's going to be necessary to help you move the needle and get, you know, more PRs and take more time off of your race times. That's, I think, where when we talk about progression and building your capacity, I like to use the idea of you're kind of building a bigger bucket. Right? When you're only running maybe 15 to 20 miles a week, you know, you've got a smaller bucket. It's not the smallest one, but a smaller bucket. And when you go to do workouts, you kind of tip that bucket over. And your whole goal is to try to finish that workout, ideally, depending on the kind of it and how it's described to you. You might be pouring it out really fast and then taking some time and some rest. That'd be like an interval workout. You're kind of, you know, spilling the bucket out, then you're resting and letting that bucket fill back up. You spill it back out, or you might be doing a tempo run or something like that, and you're slowly kind of trickling it out in that workout. And so as you build more fitness, you build a bigger bucket. You build the ability to handle that. You build more capacity. So that base training is all about, you know, can we build a bigger bucket without having to spend a lot of time tipping it out, you know, and that's where you get tired. That's where we build fatigue, is in the pouring out of the bucket, if that makes sense. It's a good analogy, hopefully. Makes sense. Next one we've got here, one of the big ones is that, how do I structure my training? You know, do I really need a rest week? Is it actually important? Can I just go hard every day?
So I think periodization is definitely something we could probably talk about a whole episode. So absolutely, we won't go too much into that today. But the general idea is, depending on the person, their age, where they are in training, either having 3 weeks build with 1 week recovery or 2 weeks build with 1 week recovery. So recovery doesn't mean that you're just taking that week completely off. Yeah. I think that's what a lot of newer athletes, they hear that and they're really afraid, like, no, I'm going to lose everything or I'm going to get too stiff or whatever. You're still getting in some speed work. You're still getting in a longer run. You're still getting in your miles, mm-hmm. But you're just decreasing the intensity and, you know, a little bit of that duration for the week, so that your body can recover a little bit and you can start to build back up again. If you're constantly just building and going up, we start to run into those, you know, those times of being overtrained, fatigued, and you're just not getting your full benefit.
Yeah, I like to think of it as like a rest week in some ways is like freshness. You know, you're going to feel like, you know, if you're normally running 30 to 35 miles a week and then you do a week at 25, you know, that 25, you feel great. And I think for most people that go to that 25-mile week after a couple of 30 to 35, the first thing they're going to do is like, I feel great on every run. I feel like I could run these super fast. That's the first thing you can't do. You know, in terms of that structure, you know, why do we have, you know, easy days in between? Why can't I just do hard workout and easy day, hard work, easy day, hard? Why do we have 2 days in between or things like that, or have an off day or a day where we just cross train? And what I want you guys to kind of understand is that as a new runner, you know, you're still kind of exploring, you know, how to manage cumulative fatigue, right? We always kind of have this acute fatigue of like, this workout made me tired today. Well, what's going to happen in a week from now? How are you going to feel after 2 weeks or 3 weeks? That's when we start to deal with cumulative fatigue, the fatigue that kind of stacks up. And what we want to try to do is schedule our weeks in a way that we ultimately can come into each workout fresh and ready, but still have something in between there that, again, it goes back to building our base. We interject that base training because we're recovering. It's flushing out our legs. It's giving us a way to move our body, to sweat. You know, we're going to go through a whole lot of things that happen there. That's a whole nother episode. But the reality is you need those easy days in between those hard days so that you have built up kind of that energy store, right? You got to recharge that battery, a sleep cycle, an easy day. And as we build that capacity, like we talked about earlier, that capacity is that changes from maybe a 2 mile walk as a beginning runner to a 2 mile run to then maybe it becomes 4 miles, 6 miles. And you're starting to say, oh, I can have 2 days of recovery in between my workouts. And then I still have enough energy if I take a recovery day before my long run. And the capacity, that bucket gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you start to, your body adapts to the ability to manage more running as recovering. And what you start to modulate there is intensity and frequency of intensity. That's really what changes there. So rest weeks are super important. That's where the general overall feeling of that whole week is down. Your whole goal is to finish that week feeling fresh. Those rest days in between where it may not have anything on the schedule, those are when you need to eat more. That's when you need to kind of pile these things out. It feels a little weird to maybe eat more during your rest day, but you got to build that energy up.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is just, you know, there's kind of a little bit of a formula you can follow if you're building your own workouts where, you know, you want to have, again, 80% of your runs done at an easy aerobic pace. You probably want to get one longer run in. Most people do that on the weekends, but it varies person to person. And you want to have at least one kind of faster workout where you're mm-hmm. increasing your max heart rate and working on kind of that like heart rate variable or variability. So, you know, the biggest things are not to put your hard workouts and your long runs back to back to make sure you're spreading things out and giving yourself ample time to recover. And yeah, exactly. On those recovery days, like, you should be sleeping every day, but making sure that you're taking care of yourself, making sure, you know, that you're eating well and just doing a good little self inventory.
Yeah. So I would say that, you know, in between your hard days, have at least one recovery day in there. And that recovery can be cross training, it can be weightlifting and things like that, but the intensity needs to be low. Absolutely. Next one here is kind of goes into, we won't kind of chop up what everything means here, but like, to define what is speed work, this is such a big topic. Again, this is a whole podcast in and of itself. But to just kind of give you guys some definitions here, you know, intervals and tempos and progression runs, fartleks, things like that. These are probably all terms that you've seen. You know, by majority, we can kind of toss these back and forth. For me, intervals are truly really fast running, right? And normally we kind of break these down in terms of meters, right? You may see 400 meter reps, 800 meter reps, 600s, right? 400 meters is one lap around the track. You know, just that interval also demands that if it's fast, you're going to need recovery. By majority, intervals demand a static recovery, a standing recovery. So, you know, tempo is by majority a continuous run. This is one of those few times where we would see an athlete that would be in zone 3. This is kind of Kind of in that nebulous zone of not quite super hard. This is where actually most people end up running most of their runs as new runners, as they stick into that tempo. But when we're structuring a tempo run, it's specific. Usually you have a pace that you're trying to hit, and maybe try to nail a certain heart rate. And this would be, you know, your zone three type heart rate, zone three, maybe low zone four type work. And this is going to fall somewhere between your half marathon pace or your marathon pace, but sticking to either one isn't the worst thing in the world. This is where you're trying to spend time and build your comfort at a specific pace.
When it comes to your health and longevity, you hold nothing back. You understand what it means to push harder, reach farther, and go the extra mile. This relentless drive runs in your blood. That's why Inside Tracker provides you with a personalized plan to build strength, speed recovery, and optimize your health for the long haul. Created by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometrics, Inside Tracker analyzes your blood, DNA, and fitness tracking data to identify where you're optimized and where you're not. You'll get a daily action plan with personalized guidance on the right exercise, nutrition, and supplementation for your body. And when you connect Inside Tracker with your Fitbit or Garmin, you'll unlock real-time recovery pro tips after you complete your workout. It's like having your own personalized trainer and nutritionist in your pocket. For a limited time, you can get 20% off the entire Inside Tracker store. Just go to insidetracker.com/defining endurance. That's insidetracker.com/defining endurance.
And so a progression run is where you're going to start out probably at your easy aerobic pace and gradually increase, depending on the workout, either to about what your goal marathon pace will be or about up to a 5K pace, depending on the workout, depending on who you are, depending what you're training for. These can be different intervals as much as, you know, every quarter mile if you're doing a shorter one to up to a mile each throughout the entire run. These can also look like runs where you go out at a slower pace and return at a faster pace. You know, just trying to work on creating some variance in your pacing in your body. And then fartleks I'm actually not the biggest fan of fartleks. I tend to use pickup instead, mm-hmm. Especially using Training Peaks. I think that athletes just like to have that
structure.
Structure. But both are great. So fartleks in Swedish, I believe, or Scandinavian means speed play. One of those languages. Yeah. Weird folks up there.
It's too cold.
Yeah. So it means speed play. And so that's essentially what you're doing is you're doing a shorter interval throughout your run. You're throwing them in kind of when they look fun. So for a fartlek, you might look and be like, oh, to that sign, it's about 30 feet. I'm going to pick up and run as fast as I can or about 5K pace. The reason I tend to use pickups instead of fartleks is just I do – 30-second pickups at about going up to about 5K pace every half mile, just because that's easy for athletes to see. Mm-hmm. Once they get to be a little bit more in tune with themselves, fartleks are a great exercise. But I've just found a lot of new runners tend to get really overwhelmed with them and not know how fast to go, not know
how far. There's too many variables.
But if you're comfortable doing that, they're so fun to play around on hills, trail runs, great places to do fartleks.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they are, I'll use the word, they're nebulous. They're this like, okay, I don't quite know how fast I'm going. So for any new runner out there, like there's a certain comfort that comes with structure. And the big thing that really separates fartleks from a tempo or even a progression is that, yes, it's continuous like the tempo and the progression runs, but you're kind of like throbbing the gas pedal. You're kind of mashing it to the floor, and then you're just taking your foot off the gas. But you're never really hitting the brake like you would in terms of intervals. You're not sitting there kind of sitting at the light kind of thing waiting to go. You're kind of constantly on and off the gas. And these are great, but I am with you, Lexi. I like more of what we would consider maybe continuous intervals, where we have a very structured time where we're trying to run at our 10K pace or our 5K pace, and then we're doing running recoveries. Second to last one here, I think training surfaces. I know that both of us train athletes, both trail and road. We've got new runners that are probably listening that are both on trail and road. Let me give an example. If we have a run that says, hey, I'm going to go out and my training plan says 4 miles at 7:30 pace. You know, it's a lot harder if I do it on the trail. Is that a reasonable expectation to go out and kind of hold myself to that 7:30 structure? Do I adjust? If so, by how much? Like, you know, let's give the people some ideas of what we're looking at.
So whether you use Training Peaks or Strava, you'll know this is two different things, but there's a net graded pace, NGP, or graded average pace, GAP. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's really hard to know what that is while you're running.
Yeah.
So if we're used to running on the roads and then we jump onto the trail and we're like, why am I so slow? Like, it doesn't seem that hilly, but you're stepping over roots and rocks and mud and everything else. So, you know, going by heart rate rather than pace is going to be ideal for training on the trail versus the road. I'll let you share your thoughts. And then I kind of also want to talk a little bit about concrete versus asphalt.
And oh, yeah.
That kind of training surface for new runners as well.
Yeah, it's a real thing. So, you know, I think one of the things to kind of, you know, to give people, again, that structure, because there's safety in structure, is I tend to just give a 45 second to a minute buffer on your pace. So if it said 7:30, go to 8:15, 8:30 pace. And the reason is you're not gripping with every step like you would on, you know, more firm surfaces. You're also navigating quite a bit. But let me throw another thing at you, because we live out here in Colorado, and I don't think there's a flat trail really to be found nearby too often. And also we're dealing with altitude, and that's a whole nother thing if you're training at altitude, and maybe you're following a buddy's plan that's training at sea level. Yeah, you're going to be working with different stuff, even though you guys might be the same speed. Altitude has a huge role to play, as well as, you know, a rolling trail. But yeah, like you said, normalized graded pace and GAP, it'll give you that when you finish your run, say, wow, that felt about right. You know, and you'll say, yep, my GAP, my normalized graded pace was right there, 725, 735. And it's right in the zone that I want to be. But the last thing I'll kind of give to you guys is, you know, this is hard. This will be hard for a lot of new runners, is that idea of like perceived effort. You know, you have to have some miles under your belt to be able to say, yeah, this feels about right, and not look at the watch and not worry about the pace nearly as much. And that's where a metric like heart rate is perfect, because your heart rate doesn't really care if you're on a trail or if you're on the road. So if that run says instead 4 miles at 152 beats, doesn't matter where you do it. You just got to get your 4 miles in at 152 beats. So hopefully that was helpful.
Well, and the other thing I think that should be said with running on trails versus roads, especially if that's kind of what you're training for, mm-hmm. Maybe if you're training for your first ultra or just your first trail race, is typically in general you should be going with time rather than miles, just because it's going to look so differently. Mm-hmm. So this is something I've run into with a lot of like people training for their first 50K, is they're worried they're not going to get enough miles if, you know, they're only running for 2 hours on a trail, but, you know, it could be a really gnarly trail and take a really long time. So that's where I encourage them to kind of try and find those more like, sure, you want to train on a course that's similar to what you'll be racing on. But to start out, you know, maybe go with something with a few less hills, maybe even start out on the roads to kind of get that pace up to where you want it to be, to build that strength and that power before you go onto those really gnarly trails. And that's how you're going to make sure that you'll get that mileage in while going for time instead.
I think that's awesome. I think a lot of people use mileage as their like big, you know, I ran 40 miles this week. You know, that was two more than last week. Were they quality? Mm-hmm. Were they the right thing? And speaking of the right thing, I want to make sure we got back to that concrete and asphalt question there.
That's something that a lot of new runners, they start to get kind of the, you know, shin splints, which we can go off on a tangent another time about. Oof. How we feel about people being diagnosed with shin splints. It's a general term. There's something else going on.
Yeah.
Always press your doctor if they just tell you have shin splints. But besides that, when you're running a lot on concrete, concrete's going to be the hardest surface. Mm-hmm. And it's going to really start to wear on your peroneals. It's going to wear on your feet. It's going to, you know, you could start to get some stress reactions if you aren't wearing good shoes. So concrete's going to be really difficult. But then we get on the road and there's this whole new issue if you live in a place like Colorado or anywhere where there's snow, where we have banked roads, where they have a nice little hill in the middle, which again is going to kind of throw off the body a little bit.
You got one hip that's higher than the other, and things start to get thrown off.
So I would say the best thing any runner can do, unless you can just like run on a dirt road all the time, is to mix up the surfaces you're running on. Mm-hmm. Don't always run on the trail. Don't always run on the road. Don't always run on the bike path.
Yeah.
Mix it up.
Yeah. I think, you know, one thing there is that, you know, I don't want to vilify concrete. You know, you can run on concrete, but if you're doing every single run, if you're doing 15, 20 miles, you know, training for that first marathon and all you have is concrete, you're going to feel it. Like, and that's where, you know, making sure that you are also looking at form and mechanics and trying to make sure that as a new runner, you're paying attention to some of those things, because those will have more of an impact than just the amount of time that you're running on concrete as well. You can save yourself from those. So I just wanted to be really clear that, you know, I run on concrete frequently, but prefer asphalt, and by a majority prefer a nice flat, you know, dirt road, maybe not too many big rocks if we're talking about perfect. If it had some shade, oof, and to make sure the sun was always partly cloudy and kept those temperatures in that perfect.
Right. Yeah. And you know, find those places. I think every place has like a nice place where you can get a nice long run on a soft surface and give your body a little bit of a rest.
Yeah.
But yeah, concrete's awesome for speed work. You'll feel so fast. Yeah. You know, if you have a chance to run on a track here and there, that's great. Yeah. Again, don't do it every day.
Nope.
And just, you know, give your body a little bit of, you know, variety is the spice of life. Mix up where you're running.
Absolutely. If you guys are looking for something good in your area, I recommend looking up any of those old rail trail restoration projects. Those usually tend to be asphalt. And those you can get a little bit more mileage, and they tend to have long sections. And they're also usually pretty safe, have drinking fountains and regular intersections. So yeah, I think the last one here is for our newest runners, people that are maybe just venturing, truly coming right off the couch, and they may not be at a point where they're fully ready to do continuous running for, you know, maybe more than 5 minutes at a time. And this is where I think most people give up. They're, you know, give up on running. Oh, it's too hard. Well, yeah, don't expect that, you know, you're going to be able to pop off the couch and just go run for 20 minutes straight. You know, you got to, most people don't go out first and run easy. And then secondly, they try to do too much too soon, or too much too soon too often. And they end up getting injured. And then they're like, well, running always injures me. Well, I hate to say it, but you might be doing it wrong. Let's talk a little bit about the run-walk method to kind of give you guys a little bit of history. There was a coach named Jeff Galloway out of Atlanta that originated the idea of using run walk as not just a way of training people to get the ability to go out and do continuous. It is his whole methodology. He does run walk for even athletes that are 3 hours and below in the marathon, which is like a 6:40 mile average for those out there. And it's run walk. His whole thing is run walk. And so it definitely does get results, but we don't see it at the elite level. So, you know, where does run walk really fit? And I think it's a great way for beginners to slowly kind of build up and kind of blend more time running. You know, I tend to work with athletes that are kind of in the, you know, amateur, maybe Boston qualifiers on up to the amateur elite and beyond. I know that you work quite a bit with beginners and new runners, Lexi. How do you approach a runner that maybe this is their, you know, they've done maybe a couple 5Ks, maybe it's been a few years. Where do you really start?
Yeah, no, I've been really fortunate, especially early in my coaching, to get a lot of athletes that were brand new runners training for their first ever race. What I tell every single athlete, no matter what level they're at, is the first month that I'm working with you, you're just going to feel like you're going crazy with how little you feel like you're doing. I like to start out everyone pretty conservatively, just because we're adding in new things. And it's so easy to stress out the body and overdo something. And I think runners tend to sign up, or any person, we start a goal and we like sign up for a goal and we're like, this is what I'm doing and I'm going to put all my energy into it. And we tend to go a little bit overboard with it, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a month and we're burned out.
Yeah.
So I think everyone, you know, just start easy. With run walk, the system I like to use is take a 10-minute period of time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for maybe the first beginning, it'll be 3 10-minute periods of time, so a 30-minute exercise. And we'll start off with maybe 2 minutes running, 8 minutes walking, which for someone who is brand new to it, that's perfect. For someone who's not brand new, that might seem like a little too little.
Yeah.
But then the next run, we're going to increase our run by a minute, decrease our walk by a minute.
Yep.
If it's, again, a newer person, we're going to hold, like, maybe take a couple of runs to change all that. If it's somebody who's getting back into it, coming back from an injury, and this is also a really common thing I've done for people once they're cleared from PT, but they haven't run in a year, we'll start off that way. And just each workout is going to increase a minute of running, decrease a minute of walking until we get to about the point of running for 8 to 9 minutes, walking for 1 to 2, and then we're going to hang out there for a while as we gradually increase from 30 minutes to 40 minutes, and then 40 to 50, then 50 to an hour. So you're just kind of recovering your body, and then eventually it's going to be the point where you can run for an hour without even noticing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, this is also something I think a lot of people kind of tuck their ego into. If I'm going to go out for a run, I want to go out for a run. And I'll tell you, you know, that run walk might not seem like the hardest workout you've ever done at first. But there's probably other things you can do inside there. Cause you're, like we said, you might do a run walk and then the next day is a rest day. Well, I only ran 6 minutes yesterday. Yeah. You only ran 6 minutes yesterday, but why don't we get you lifting some weights? Maybe, you know, you can do some continuous cardio on the bike, right? These things that are adjacent to running that are ultimately going to help you down the road as an athlete, but there, you don't have to just use running when you're starting off to help you get fit and improve your running. I have tons of athletes that use cross training as a huge advantage. It takes, you know, pressure off your joints, right? Swimming, absolutely one of the hardest things I think to do. It's a huge aerobic sport. If you're not good at swimming, don't know how to swim, great. You probably know how to ride a bike. You can do that. If you can't ride a bike, guess what? We've got tons of videos on our site that have great strength training programs. We've got some amazing trainers that will walk you through it, do Zoom calls with you, and get you started with those things. So if you're new to running, don't be afraid by what you don't know. All of us are still learning. I've been running for more than a decade, and I'm still learning things, even as a coach, about my own running and about myself. So, you know, I would say that my general advice, and I'll pass off to Lexi to close out today, my general advice to anybody that's starting off with running is you have to be consistent. It's the number one thing that will change your training, period. Consistency over time, right? If you think about it, if you try to go out and you try to do 10% at once, then you're going to have to take a huge amount of time, and that those results are going to degrade. But if you go out every day, you do 1% better, you do 1% more, not 10, not 5, not 3, but 1, and you're just consistent about 1% better every day, that's going to add up way more over time than trying to have these huge chunks, then an injury, you regress, it just becomes this Humpty Dumpty, and you're just kind of trying to cobble it and put it all back together again, and it doesn't work. Be consistent. That's my number one advice. Lexi?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say my number one piece of advice is just to give yourself grace. I think a lot of people, whether they're a seasoned runner or brand new, they tend to be really hard on themselves. And that tends to be what drives people to greatness and to do really well. But it also is what tears you apart inside and is going to make it a really not fun hobby. So if you're dreading your hard workouts, if you're dreading your next race, it's not okay. Like, that's not how you should be living. So don't go into every workout thinking that you're going to fail or being hard on yourself for not hitting those paces exactly. Give yourself grace. Know that you're human. Be excited that you're getting it done and what you're accomplishing.
Well, that's all for this week, guys. If you have a chance, if you guys like this, you can go over to lifelongendurance.com. Under our media tab, you can check out some of our prior episodes. We're on, on all of the channels these days, Spotify, Google, Anchor.
I think we're everywhere, every major podcast place you can find us. You can also find Coach Andrew Instagram at Coach Simmons Runs. You can also, he has a website, runwestward.com.
That's true.
And then we both have blogs on our personal Lifelong Endurance site. You can find me, Coach Lexi at Lifelong Endurance, or Coach Lexi Lifelong Endurance, or my site, Wild Miles Running. Definitely feel free to reach out to us either place. We are always happy to talk about things. And like I said, we're hoping to make this question answer sort of forum something that we do a little bit more frequently. So send those questions and we'll be excited to talk.
Awesome. Have a great one, guys.